everyone, and welcome back to Lit Radio Podcast. I'm Thea, and today I'm joined by Jay Connolly. We'll talk about her book, Carbon Credits Are Crap, the myths, the mess, and the way forward for traceable carbon credits. Jay is a global technology leader driving transparency, traceability, and economic independence across Africa. With over 40 years of executive experience in finance, tech, energy, and healthcare, she has helped governments and communities leverage innovation to access the climate economy. Her TEDx talk, also titled Carbon Credits Are Crap, ignited global conversations about fairness, accountability, and inclusion in the $2 trillion carbon markets. In Carbon Credits Are Crap, Jay exposes how the global climate market exploits rather than empowers. This eye-opening book demands transparency, accountability, and a climate economy that puts people over profits. Hi Jay, it's a great pleasure to have you with us on Lit Radio Podcast today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on here.
Absolutely. So I'm very excited to speak with you about your book, Carbon Credits Are Crap. But before we do that, let me ask you to explain to our listeners, if they don't really know what we're talking about, could you explain how carbon credits work?
Sure. So basically, carbon credits are meant to represent one ton of carbon dioxide that's either avoided or removed from the atmosphere. And the idea behind it was like, look, there's companies that are trying to be net zero by 2030, and they can only do so much by cutting their emissions internally. So could they offset their emissions by buying, investing in projects that are usually in underdeveloped countries that either reduce the emissions or avoid it? And for every one ton that's avoided or removed, a carbon credit is issued. And they are traded on an open marketplace. And it's been going on for about 20, 30 years. It's been going on for quite some time.
Yeah. And in an ideal world, that would have worked really well. But as you found out, that's not the case. But could you tell us what sparked your interest in the carbon markets?
Yeah, so I've been working in Africa for the past decade, and I work with the presidents and governments to help bring transparency to their economies and help create sovereign nations. And carbon credits, I had heard about them a couple of years ago, but one of my friends sent me an article in January of 2023 that said this flagship carbon credit project called Kariba, which was a big forest-related carbon credit project, was worthless, that the carbon credits were worthless, that the company hadn't avoided any. I think 90% was the number. And, but it said, you know, the good news is the communities that were protecting this forest got 30%. And when I read through the article, it said this Swiss company made $100 million off the forest. The companies had bought worthless carbon credits, and so they were kind of messed up. And then the climate, it didn't really absorb the carbon, as they said. But the communities were supposed to get this $30 million. And I thought, I doubt it. So that's what sparked it. And I wanted to go out and see for myself.
Yeah, and then you actually went out to Africa on a 10,000-mile journey. So could you share with us what happened there and what you found out?
Sure. So I went out to Kariba, and it's not an easy place to get to. The roads are terrible. We had many flat tires. And I went out there to meet with the chiefs, and I wanted to see firsthand how these carbon credit projects were benefiting the communities. And I thought, well, $30 million, this is a lot of money in Zimbabwe. So I gave I met with the chief, and I gave him the article, and I explained what carbon credits were. And I asked him, what he had received over the last 12 years. And he just kind of shook his head. He said, I got a bag of seed, I got a bag of soil, and we've dug boreholes, but we never got the equipment. We have this crappy little garden over there. He goes, overall, I haven't seen much. You know, they said they're going to give us rubber trees so that we can build with them, but haven't gotten those. And I told him, I said, you know, you should have been getting $30 million of benefits. And he was quite angry. And he said, you know, with that kind of money, this place would look like New York City. And instead, we suffer for the basics. Internet, there was no internet, electricity, jobs, education, fuel, and clean water. So he was pretty bummed out. Yeah. And then I went to the government to see what was going on there. And they were just shocked. I said, look, this European company made $100 million off your forest in the name of carbon credits. And they were like, what? What are you talking about? And I'm like, why don't you know about this? They're like, we don't even know what you're talking about. And I said, well, it's off your forest. It was 1 million hectares of forest. What did you get out of it? And they're like, I don't even know what you're talking about. I said, the carbon credits. And I explained it to them. And they said, air is worth that much money. And they didn't get anything. So they were pretty, pretty mad.
Well, yeah, I can imagine why they would be mad. But is that why you decided to write the book, Carbon Credits Are Crap?
Yeah. So last year I did a TED talk on this, and, you know, in true TED talk form, you can't really give details. And so I did it very broadly as to the problem. It made it general and kind of what are some solutions going forward. And after my TED talk, people were reaching out to me and saying, hey, you know what? We don't even know what a carbon credit is. And this is in California, which we're kind of the environmental friendly state of the United States. And I was like, what do you mean you don't know what this? I just thought everyone knew. They've been around for a while and they didn't know. And I said, you know what? I got to write a book about this. I had talked to the big oil companies. I went to the COP. I've talked to the project developers. I just studied the whole ecosystem. And I said, this is a flawed system. It's not, the benefits are not going down to the local communities. Those guys are still suffering as they have been for the last 30 years. So I can't stay quiet anymore. So I got tired of the talk, the green talk and sustainability reports. There's no substance. There's a lot of 8x10 glossies. There's volumes of documents. So I said, you know what? I'm going to write a book and I'm going to have a call to action because I want to drive awareness that leads to a better system.
Absolutely. And before we talk more about what's inside the book and some of your insights and findings, and because this is a book podcast, obviously, could you share with us what was the process of writing that book?
Yeah, it was actually, it's been my story. So it's my journey through learning about carbon credits, the people I met along the way, the facts, the figures. You know, I'm an accountant by long time ago. So facts and figures are valuable to me. And just explain also about Africa, why Africa is so important, because look, it contains Earth's second lung called the Congo Basin. And together with that, with the Amazon, that creates a lot of oxygen for us. And so we got to protect it. And there's a lot of clear cutting going on, a lot of illegal logging, there's charcoal. And these communities are like, look, we don't have any means of income. So give us income and we'll stop doing it. And carbon credits were supposed to do that. And it didn't. So they're still doing the same practice. So my process was I sat down on a weekend, I had a 3-day weekend and wrote the book. I just wrote it and it was my story and it was all the people I met along the way. And then I wrote it and then I got connected to you guys like a month later and it went pretty quickly.
Yeah, it really did. But I'm really amazed you managed to write a whole book in 3 days.
Yeah, yeah, 3 days. Yeah, this story had been in me for a year. So after the TEDx, and I was just kind of mad about the whole process. And I was like, this isn't right. So that's what drove me to write it.
Yeah, you just needed it to go out.
It did.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, you were very productive. But right, so let's talk about the book and and some of the things that people can find inside it. So you've mentioned that a little bit earlier in the discussion, but over 90% of, especially in the book, you talk about the forest carbon credits are essentially worthless. So, I mean, That's an amazing number. It's over 9%. So how is that even possible?
So the system is flawed. So it's based upon predictions and promises and not proof. And it's a very analog system. And I will tell you how they measure whether a tree is growing and what type of how much carbon it's absorbing. And I kid you not, there's actually videos you can go look up. They actually go out to the field, they take a tape measure, a ladder, and a clipboard, and they go out and sample trees over a different periods of time. And they measure that tree, they copiously write it down on their clipboard, and then they go back and throw it in an Excel spreadsheet, and then they make a prediction. It's a random sampling. So if you think about Kariba, it's 1 million hectares of a forest, and it's not a forest like a rainforest. It's a very sparse forest. It's kind of a almost it's very arid. It's a very arid forest. And so I was like, how could they possibly come out here? And then you look at that area, 1 million hectares, and there's only 175,000 people that live in the area. So in order to have a carbon credit, you have to show that you have additionality, like because of your project, you prevented people from burning down the trees or doing anything. But with that vast of area and that little of a population, when they came and did the analysis, and actually the reporters are the ones that broke the story based upon whistleblowers from the climate investors, and they had caught an error, and they said, you know, the whistleblowers came to the Swiss company and said, hey, we made a mistake. We didn't estimate it right. We got to redo this. And, you know, we overestimated. And the four guys at the top said, yeah. And they continued to sell the carbon credits. And so the whistleblowers got mad and said, that's not okay. We're in it for good, not for bad. You guys kept selling carbon credits after we told you we made a mistake. So the system is very analog and it's predictions and promises. There's no proof. And now with technology, we can actually fly a satellite over. We can tell you what type of tree is there. We can tell you the height. We can tell you everything about it. And also in the system, we had it's a very consultant-driven system. So you start out with a project developer who has to create this plan, and you have to hire consultants to create the plan. Then it gets submitted to this verification board who looks at the plan and asks copious questions and then maybe approves it or not. And once it's approved, then it goes through. Now you do implementation of the project. And then the verifiers send out a third-party certifier to go out and say, go certify this based upon a methodology that we've given you, like an audit program. And then they certify it and then they issue the credits and then it goes in the marketplace and then people buy them. So it's a very analog, many ecosystems of consultants just piling on. And after the sale in the plan, it actually says this is how much percentage we're going to give the communities and what we're going to do for the communities. It is spelt out in the plan. But no one ever checks because no one cares about did the where the money flew, how it flowed. They care about was the carbon credit valid or not. They don't care if it said 25% or 30%. It's supposed to go to the communities. Nobody checks that. Nobody. And so for the Kariba project, when I went out there and I talked to the certifiers, like the people certifying this, and they go out every 4 or 5 years to certify it, depends on the plan. They said, well, yeah, we knew it wasn't right, but we followed the methodology. So the methodology was wrong. And I'm like, well, why didn't you say anything? They're like, well, that's not our job. So it was, there's no rigorous check. There's no one holding anyone really accountable. It's a very loose marketplace. And everything we're talking about, by the way, is the voluntary carbon credit market. There's also a compliance side of the, which has more regulations, but this is the voluntary carbon credit market so that companies can become net zero.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me the system is failing really badly.
It did. Yes. Yes.
Well, I mean, from what I hear, I mean, I'm really interested because we know a lot of businesses, especially in the West, I mean, they're paying billions of dollars for those carbon credits to
Yes.
offset their carbon emissions. But do they know they're actually paying for nothing?
You know, they did know. they did find out. And that was one of the tragedies that I wish, if, you know, I'm a CEO of a tech company. And if I had found out that I had bought worthless carbon credits, I would have spoken up. And none of the companies spoke up, zero. And they're big companies. It's Porsche, L'Oreal, Gucci, McKesson. I mean, big name companies. And not one company said, this isn't right. And if they had, I promise you the system would have been fixed. But they just stayed quiet because they didn't want the ramifications. They did nothing wrong. They bought carbon credits based upon all these certifications and verifications and reports and blah, blah, blah. But they didn't want the bad press. And that is a problem. That's a big problem. Because 2023 was the bloodshed for carbon credits. It just was one fraud after another fraud after another fraud. It wasn't just forest. It was cook stoves. It was grasslands, you name it. And the analog old system wasn't, it's not keeping up with what actually needs to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why we need people like you who are raising awareness about that. But yeah, obviously we need the companies to speak up.
Yes.
I think it's great for actually finally having that conversation. But the subtitle of your book is The Myths, the Mess, and the Way Forward for Traceable Carbon Credits. So could you share with us what are some strategies that you discuss in the book that can improve that failing system?
Yeah, so one of the things we're actually working on is technology. So how do we shorten this cycle? Because this process of certifying, let's say, the forest, it takes 18 to 36 months. Like, you know how many different people and the turnover? So you never have the same folks. So we can shorten that using technology. And we can use, like we talked about, satellite imagery, LIDAR. There's companies out there doing this. AI, super powerful right now. And so that we can actually show whoever's buying the carbon credits everything that's going on real time. We can put drones, we can put remote sensing, we can put cameras in the village. There's so much we can do so that the end buyer can be assured that what we said we're doing is being done. So that's where tech comes in. And, you know, consultants don't like tech because that eats into their money, then into their gig. So there's a bunch of tech folks that we've gotten together and we're trying to digitize this whole process. And then the auditing, or if you will, the verification process is digital. And then you have real on the ground people that are actually managing the process. And that was a bit of a problem because I actually talked to some of the people on the ground that were managing this Kariba project. And it was just silly things. Like if you come and learn, one of the benefits, if you come to this lunch that you're going to cook for us and dance for us and we'll teach you about malaria, then we'll give you bottles of water. It's just little stuff. And you're like, that's what you're doing? Like, that's not what the people need. So the other thing we found, what's flawed in this, it's really a top-down approach. It's not going to local communities. There's a box you check to go to the stakeholders and say, what do you need? But they're not listening. But if you involve the communities and saying, look, we want to come in here, we want to create sustainable economies that help you do whatever you want to do. What are those 10 things? And they'll tell you, because they know exactly what they need. And then just say, great, we're going to create, you have to have a creative, sustainable economy. And none of these projects do. There's no jobs. So with no jobs, you're going to get the same result. You're going to get the same process. So that's what we're doing. Everything from using technology, starting at the bottom, moving bottom up rather than top down. And then there needs to be independent verification. All these guys are all, I call it the mafia, the carbon mafia. They're so ancestral. There's people that were doing big carbon credit projects that sat on the verification board. You're like, what? And then the verification guys, you know, they get paid based upon how many carbon credits they issue. So that's there's a lot of conflicts of interest. So trying to digitize it, using technology as much as we can, and then really keep the voice of the local community front and center.
Absolutely. I think those are some great strategies, but I would like to talk a little bit more about the technology part. And in the book, you talk about using AI and other technologies, but some people might argue that, well, using those technologies, it can actually cause more, well, carbon emissions to go into the atmosphere. So, yeah, how
True.
would you respond to that?
Yeah, so the data centers where AI and blockchain are going in right now, they're becoming super efficient. At least they are in the States. They're looking at doing micro nuclear powers, looking at the solar. So that's one. The sustainability of data centers is a whole nother carbon credit strategy, and there's a lot of work being done on that. So AI and blockchain, those are big, big tech. They do suck a lot of energy, causing carbon credits, but they're already out there. We're already using them, so it's not adding any more. We're just using the technology that's out there. Satellite imagery, that's been around forever, so I don't really think that's a carbon credit. I mean, making them, yes, but I don't think them flying around. So it's really using the technology that's already existing. So we're not adding new technology. We're just using what's already out there to help them. And you don't get penalized for using technology in a carbon credit accounting. There's a lot of things that are negative carbon. If you have to drive so many miles and that gets deducted, or it depends on the type of project. There's a lot. It's a very complex system and it can be simplified. But when you start, this came out of the UN. So you can imagine a bunch of people sitting at the UN writing policy. It gets complicated. And as business people are like, well, we can make this simpler.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, let's hope that will happen sooner rather than later. And talking of businesses, how can business leaders and also individuals who want to help with the climate crisis and they think buying carbon credits might be of help, how can make sure that the carbon credits they're buying are actually valuable when they're doing something?
Yeah. So look, I equivalate it to me, a carbon credit is like a stock. So, because it goes out on a marketplace and you buy them for whatever price you can negotiate. And I equivalate a carbon credit to a stock. So when you buy a stock, you do your diligence, right? You look at the financials, you want to know everything about the management team. You do your diligence. So my whole thing is like, do your homework. You should be able to ask every single carbon credit where it with when it was issued, what was the origin, what was the impact, and what was the community benefits. All that should be able to be answered. And if the carbon credit company can't answer that, then speak up, because there's a problem. And so through this all, as we hear about more and more projects, or we have the media's on it, we call them and say, look, here's another fraudulent project we found. So do your homework, ask for the project is, who owns it, who's benefiting, just look at it. And then the whole and I would ask, the community benefits, what are they actually getting? And show me. I don't want an 8x10 glossy photo, because they were all there in the Kariba project. But when you went out there, it was a marketing gig. And when you looked at the reality, it wasn't. So to me, that's why I like the videos rather than the 8x10 glossy. So ask questions. And when it doesn't add up, speak up, because you can't stay silent. Like, if these companies would have spoken up $100 million and spoken up, we would not have this problem right now.
Yeah, it's our job to hold them accountable.
Yes.
Yeah. And well, so what can our listeners do apart from obviously checking the carbon credit they're buying? What else can they do to raise awareness about the issue?
Yeah, well, educate yourself, right? So, like right now, when you buy, there's a when you get an airline ticket, they always have an option now that you can buy to reduce your. You can buy it. I don't know what did they say. I think it's you can buy something to reduce your emissions on the plane. That's carbon credit. There's one company out of Norway called Choose, Choose, that buys carbon credits, just like the forest ones we talked about. They resell them to the airlines, and that airlines resells them to you. I will tell you probably 9 out of 10, they're worthless. So don't do it. I think it's good intent, but you'd have to go to that company. And we only found out about that because we talked to an airline. So we said, we see you have carbon credits. Do you buy them? They're like, oh, we buy them from one company. And then we started looking. I'm like, oh, there's a whole ecosystem of people being third party buyers and reselling them. And that's why, and you know, they'll buy them for a dollar or two and resell them to the public for $20. And that community only gets whatever percent of that dollar or two, not of the $20. So there's big markups. There's a lot of marketplaces. So ask questions, share knowledge, talk about it. And when you hear about this, you can read about every one of these companies. You got to hold them accountable, not just for buying them, but for buying credible ones. And then the other problem we have right now, it's climate financing. There's a lot of money. This is a $2 trillion industry. There's a lot of money out there. But real good projects aren't getting funded. And I talk to people about this all the time. I'm like, why is that? And it's because the climate investors want the next big unicorn. They want the piece of equipment that sucks the air, carbon out of the air and puts it in the ground. And if you looked where all the money went last year, it went to that type of technology. However, that technology created about 1% of the carbon credits. Where good projects like biochar, which is basically you take tree or crop waste and you put it in a pyrolysis machine and it creates biochar, which is like a charcoal's eco-friendly cousin, that generated 83% of the carbon credits last year and was only $15 million of funding. And I'm like, that's just not right. These are true traceable. You can feel it. You can touch it. You can see it. You can test it. It's the cleanest carbon credit out there. And then then the local communities can use that biochar, mix it with manure, and it creates this amazing fertilizer that goes back into the soil. So you got soil reclamation. And they have an economy because they're not using fertilizer right now. So that to me, those are the ecosystems I would look at as a buyer is like, what are you really doing? What are you really benefiting? And if you look at Africa, like 12 million carbon credits, then that's not a lot of carbon credits. When you look at, I think it was less than 5% of the carbon credits last year, 12 million carbon credits were related to renewable energy. Now, I work in Africa. Energy is the number one issue here. The power goes out all the time. They have nothing but sun. They have nothing but water. They have nothing but wind. But they don't have the infrastructure. They don't have the money for renewable energy. So those are kind of, I would look at projects if I was a buyer that really benefit a local community and not some, you know, I want to be the next billionaire using a unicorn piece of equipment that's going to suck the air out, carbon out of the air that hasn't worked yet.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is a very important conversation. And of course, I encourage our listeners to read the book because you've got even more useful suggestions and insights in there. But to finish this conversation, Jay, if there's one message from the book that you think anyone in the world should hear today, what would that be?
Yeah, look, this is a climate economy. And I think we say the global South. It's the global North versus the global South. So the global North made this up, created this ecosystem. The global South is actually suffering from climate change. Whether you believe in climate change or not, it doesn't matter. There is a climate shift. There's droughts. There's bigger storms down here in Africa and in South America. And if you want climate justice, then we've got to stop outsourcing the responsibility to people that aren't even here in the ground. They don't care. Well, they fly people from all over the world to come out and do a carbon credit project. And it's like, no, we should do it locally. We can teach people this. So we're really about education, drive awareness. And when you have a question, you don't know where to go, man, reach out to me. We have a big network, and I have people reach out to me all the time, like, hey, I just found out about this carbon credit project. What do you think? And I'll go look at it. And or I have people there that can go look at it. We'll say A or nay real quick. But there's some really great carbon credit projects going on, but you don't hear about them because they're not getting funded. So it's a shame. But sitting in a COP meeting every year and talking about climate change and the global north, what they need to pay, and da 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 da. It's not, it's you, they're not fixing any problems. They aren't. They're perpetuating the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you very much for sharing all of that with us today, Jay. As I said, I think it's a very important conversation and very interesting one, with a lot of shocking findings that you have in the book. So thank you for your time today, and I encourage our listeners to grab a copy of Carbon Credits Are Crap.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.